This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It is exactly 6 a.m. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of February. And joining me in the studio is the one and only Philip C. And I'm, of course, Wong Xiaoning.
Very good morning. How are you doing?
Pretty good. I haven't seen you for a while, Philip.
What
you
do you
graced
mean?
Us with your presence today.
I saw you last week.
It seemed like a lifetime ago, though.
But today is a very special day, isn't
Tell
it?
Us why. Come on. For today, a geek like you, I know you're so excited,
I'm
right?
I'm very excited because 22nd of February 2022, today's date is a palindrome date where you can read it backwards and forwards the same way.
Ooh. Oh, okay.
Wow. That's a palindrome for you.
Okay, all you... Sorry, I'm probably going to get so much hate mail for this, but all you geeks, nerds out there who are so excited by this doesn't happen all the time, right?
When has it happened? It hasn't happened for, I think it hasn't happened for ages, more than a century ago. But, you know, I think it's so ironic. It's just the two of us this Tuesday. And in 2 minutes, Song will begin to go through two more articles.
Oh, wow. My goodness. How corny can we get?
How lame is it?
But anyway, what do we have on this 2 days?
Okay, well, we have a very packed day today because at 7:15, we're going to discuss the alarming number of deaths in custody that have been reported this year and measures that need to be taken urgently to ensure accountability. So we have on the line YB Kasturi Pato. She's the MP for Batu Kawan and she will join us for this really important discussion.
Then at 7:30, we're going to take a look at what's happening on the ground in Ukraine, and we're just trying to keep up with the news because it just happens overnight.
It's crazy.
Headline after headline.
Yeah, exactly. Just yesterday, we were talking about the summit. Then overnight, I think President Putin has basically declared some parts of Ukraine now section and part of Russia.
Yeah, I don't understand how he can do that, but we'll find out.
Yeah.
And then at 7:45, we're going to do a check-in with the SME sector, to find out what is needed to rejuvenate the business amid this pandemic situation. All this and more, keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Ohio by Neil Young, and I'm dedicating that to Josh Rogan because... Because you can't hear this on Spotify at the moment, can you?
You can't. I think Neil Young, I think, took out his catalogue about a month ago. I wonder if he's reinstated it back yet.
No.
Not yet, right?
Yeah.
I can imagine. Even though Joe Rogan and I think even Spotify did apologise.
Yes, but they didn't remove Joe Rogan's show, right? I think his deal is worth something like $200 million now. He's the number one downloaded podcast on Spotify, the number one show.
It is because it's exclusive.
It is.
Unlike us, you know, we plebs, we kind of don't really rely on exclusivity.
You can listen to us
anywhere.
You can listen to us on Spotify. You can listen to us on the website. You can listen to us on the app. And we would love it if you listen to us repeatedly.
Exactly. But we have full democracy, right? We want to give you choice. We want to basically, you know, liberate the world with right information and, you know, insightful thoughts. So why not?
Yeah. And please fact check us all you want.
Please.
But up next, we have this interesting article from Harvard Business Review. This must be your choice, Philip, because Harvard. I mean, come on. Is this your dream because you didn't get into the Ivy League, so you feel
no,
a bit bitter?
I am not bitter at all. I didn't choose this article. I think one of our friends actually chose it. I was just a bit inspired by it. But it really talks about the unintended consequences of asking for employee input. We always think, actually, that asking for, you know, feedback from your employees is a really good thing.
Isn't it?
It's very positive. But apparently, new research is showing that actively soliciting input can have unintended negative consequences, because what's very likely is that managers are very likely not to reward you if you speak up.
Hasn't that been the case for like ever and ever?
You know, when I read this article, I fully agreed with it, and I've actually experienced this before in my career.
As in,
where people
you were
take
the
credit
boss
for your ideas.
Or you were the employee?
I
Which
was the
hat
employee.
Were you wearing?
I was the employee.
Okay, so you were the long-suffering employee, and you gave your boss a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
And then what happened? He took 100... He noticed, I assume it was a man.
Yes,
be a woman,
yes,
but
it was
a man. So 110% he took credit. He didn't even thank you. He didn't acknowledge you.
He didn't acknowledge me directly. I think he acknowledged me through like my promotions and all that in terms of the good quality work I did. But it did scar me sometimes. So it did hurt me when he went to the podium and shared an idea and he claimed it was his idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's almost like stealing it, isn't it, in a way?
It is a bit like stealing. But again, I think, look, my ideas are not proprietary because I'm an employee as well, to be honest. It's meant to be shared. But it does jar a bit when you hear your boss claim credit for it. And he kind of tells a narrative of himself, of how he came up with the story.
Oh my goodness, he had a backstory to the idea.
Exactly. When I was sipping coffee, I thought about this idea.
He even came up with that.
Exactly.
Wow, so he created almost a fictitious story about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to wear the boss's hat a little bit, right? And, I want to be on the other side of the fence. But as the boss, isn't it your fame, my fame as a team? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's where the intention is, that we look at this collectively and that everyone shares ideas and we all take credit. And even
if I look good, you look good, right?
Yes. But bosses, I think even the words matter a lot. You know, like how you say I versus we. If you say, look, we thought about it, we had come up with this solution, I think that would have settled much better. But we tend not to do that, even as employers, because we are also insecure about our jobs. So we also want to claim some credit. So we tend to say the word I very often. And this is very interesting because if you talk about the Richard Branson biography, I think one of his famous observations about his first few lines about him as an entrepreneur was that we was mentioned about 20 to 30 times, whereas I was only mentioned 3 to 5 times. And so for many people, the reflection of a really good boss is that they acknowledge sometimes that, yes, there are ideas coming from everywhere and that you don't necessarily have to take credit for it.
Okay, so it starts from you taking a little bit of a step back if you're a boss, right? And then realizing that whatever effort that is done is not yours entirely. But that's a mindset thing, you know. And I wonder whether today, especially the younger entrepreneurs are even more aware of it than in the past. Because it is something that a little bit more awareness,
yeah,
right? So, you know, if you read the autobiographies of, you know, like some of the big businessmen out there, there's a lot more eyes. Definitely those written in the 1980s and the 1970s, right? I think now there's a little bit of that, a switch towards acknowledging the team rather than the individual. But I think we're all guilty of it because essentially we are ego, right? It's hard, especially if you're the boss. You've climbed all the way to the top. You have made a success of it. You just somehow have the tendency to ignore all those that actually help you along the way. So you need to have that constant channel check and that ego check, if you ask me.
Oh, I fully agree. I think that inner reflection, that internalization, and to know that I can't do this alone has to come from within. You can't, I don't think you can necessarily just, boop, it comes naturally to you. You actually have to, it's hard work to recognize that you can't do this alone.
Okay, the other thing I would say very quickly is to always surround yourself not with yes people. That's when you really get into dangerous territory, right? Then you don't realize that it's a team effort, that people have contributed ideas. So you want to always surround yourself with, I think, good teammates.
And as a leader, the goal is to create a trusted environment for everybody to say what they need to say.
Yeah, without fear.
Absolutely.
Right? And also give them the compliments when they need. But up next, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, $3.6 billion stolen. Amazing story. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was Mad About You by Hoover Phonik. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C.
I wonder if they're mad listening to us at 6:15 in the morning.
They're probably mad having to go to work, right? Getting dressed the and then they're like, ayo, so early, it's still so dark. Ayo, I thought we still have to work from home. And then get in the car. Ayo, don't know today what road is jammed. Yeah, so perennially mad till you get to the office.
But don't worry, we will keep your sanity with insightful stories.
Yes, and this insightful story will make you even more mad because someone can steal $3.6 billion worth of Bitcoin. By the way, this $3.6 billion is US dollars. It's not ringgit, okay? So this couple, and it's based on the Wall Street Journal podcast entitled How the Government Tied One Couple to Billions in Stolen Bitcoin. And this story is just absolutely fascinating. And not that we are condoning crime, but I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Do you want to explain the story, Philip?
Right. This is a modern day Bonnie and Clyde drama. It involves two millennial crypto schemers, Heather Morgan and Ilya Lichtenstein, because they've been caught money laundering $4.5 billion worth of Bitcoin. Now, just a bit of background here. This cryptocurrency was stolen in a major 2016 hack of Hong Kong-based Bitfinex, which caused the trading value of Bitcoin then to plummet 20% at a time, right? Mm. And since then, I think 7 years after that, or 6 years, sorry, my maths is terrible. They've
since
now
the engineer.
They managed to trace that money and have recovered part of that. And it's really through this couple who have been actually been using the money to make all sorts of transactions,
yeah,
including buying Walmart vouchers.
Yeah, which is how they got caught, right? This $500 Walmart voucher. But they weren't living the high life, considering that the loot was worth $3.6 billion.
Yes.
But when they stole it, it wasn't. It was just because Bitcoin has appreciated so much.
That's right.
So hence, today's value is $3.6 billion. But the side story about this is also the fact that the American authorities really, really wanted to catch these people. They wanted to show that despite the murky world of cryptocurrency with blockchain and identity not being known, and, you know, there's all these issues that, we can hide behind Bitcoin if we're going to live a life of crime. I think the American authorities wanted to show that's not the case anymore, guys. We can track you because whatever said and done, every transaction leaves a trace.
Exactly.
But it's not the easiest of traces, but it can be done. That's why it took so long.
It took a long time, but if you listen to the podcast, they actually guide you to actually see how you can get the transaction. So if you go to www.blockchain.com and you type Explorer and you look at the latest transactions, you actually see by the second the list of transactions coming through. The only thing is they don't trace it to the person.
Mm.
So, but I think kudos to the US government for being able to be tenacious, and tracking and finding out how these transactions took place.
Well, clearly this is a signal to the rest of the world that, hey guys, you know, don't try and think that we can't find out who these perpetrators are right at the end of the day. But let's talk about this wonderful couple. Let's spend some time on them. You know, considering how much they stole, they led rather quite a humble life, because I remember the podcast, they lived in an apartment in Manhattan with a cat. Yes,
yeah.
Just a cat. I thought, you know, if you had $3.6 billion, you would like have a little bit of more of a rapper lifestyle with a Rolls Royce, buying designer goods. But no, they actually, although this girl, the lady, was a part-time rapper.
She is a larger-than-life person, you know. I think her name was Heather Morgan, if I'm not wrong. Heather Morgan. And she actually is a rapper and she calls herself Razul Khan, right?
Yeah, she's the colourful one, clearly.
She's clearly the colourful one. And then the husband, Ilya Lichtenstein, I think he's a serial entrepreneur, went through this whole accelerator program called Y Combinator, which is quite well known in the United States. So as you said, right, leading relatively unassuming lives, a bit larger than life, Heather Morgan. But as you say, when the authorities raided the place, they were really shocked to see what they found, right? I think of the 119,000 over Bitcoin stolen, they managed to recover 70,000. But what I think is shocking is that when they were hacked in 2016, Bitcoin was about $4,000. Now, 160 over 1,000, isn't it incredible?
Yeah, so, but you have to think about their mind, you know, these two individuals. They clearly are clever. Mm. They found a loophole in this exchange. They were also methodical in trying to keep a low profile, right? Because, you know, most people aren't good at keeping their money, especially when they have so much of it. They live a very extravagant life. So these two individuals kind of lay low for the longest time possible. And ironically, it was a Walmart card, $500
gift voucher that caught them. And through the transaction. And as you say, right, what a riveting story. And what we've heard so far is that Netflix might be actually doing a drama on this couple. And, you know, I was watching Tindler Swindler over the weekend. Such a riveting story. That was also much larger than life. So what a contrasting story you see as well, right, with these two couples.
And you've got Anna the Imposter. Is that the latest show?
That's right.
So there are all these people who, you know, inventing Anna. I have to apologize. My producer Sim corrected me. I don't want to look like I have no sense of pop culture awareness. But clearly, the internet, cryptocurrency, social media, we all can create identities of fake ones for sure. But up next is the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin, and to take us there is Smooth Operator by Sade, which was clearly this couple. BFM 89.9. And that was Ordinary World by Duran Duran. And clearly it's not an ordinary world at all. If we just look at the headlines, Philip, Tell us what's happening out there.
Yeah, I think it's a very fast developing story. What we are seeing here is that President Vladimir Putin is ordering troops into eastern Ukraine. I think this was on the back on just a recent announcement a couple of hours ago that they are Russia is recognizing the breakaway regions of Ukraine. I think Donetsk and Luhansk, which are controlled by Russian-backed separatists. Now, this could be fodder for them to start amassing more troops to the border. And this is a really fast-developing story because just about 12 hours ago, we thought of a hope. We thought we saw hope with President Emmanuel Macron from France trying to broker a summit between Russia and the United States. But I don't see that happening now. We also saw that UK and EU have come back and agreed to coordinate swift actions against Russia as well.
Yeah, Bloomberg is reporting the European Union, states and US, of course, quick to condemn Putin's move and kick off efforts to impose economic penalties. It's still unclear what this announcement means for the risk of a large-scale Russian invasion of Ukraine that actually, of course, the US and NATO have been worried about for months.
Yeah.
So just to give you a sense of, you know, how markets are reacting, oil is $97 a barrel. It's up 4%. So this is a very easy indicator of how nervous markets are. US was closed, unfortunately. Well, we don't know because it was President's Day. But for markets that were open, so let's look at the European markets, right? So the FTSE 100 index down 0.39%. The DAX down 2%. And the CAC was also down 2%. So markets are, even before this latest news, was already very nervous. We'll be following this story at 7:30 a.m. when we talk to Associate Professor Alexei Muraviev, who from the National Security and Strategic Studies at Curtin University. He'll give us an update of what's happening on the ground there. But other stories that have caught my eye, you know, I love a good scandal, right? This is about Credit Suisse and all these supposed 30,000 accounts. A massive leak there actually reveals secret owners of 80 billion held in Swiss bank. And a whistleblower literally leaked bank data to expose immoral secrecy laws, and clients included human trafficker and billionaire who ordered his girlfriend's murder. I mean, this is so three newspapers. Actually, it was the data was given to this independent agency who does fact finding, and then they asked certain media outlets to assist. One of which was The Guardian, and I think what happened is, you know, it's a bit like the Panama Papers. There's thousands and thousands and thousands nuggets of information. Somebody has to unearth it all, do a bit of forensic accounting, and voila, the story is starting to emerge.
Yeah, typically The Guardian is usually the expose newspaper. And I'm also on The Guardian now, and and Switzerland is at risk of EU blacklist after this leaks. As we know, Switzerland is actually a critical financial sector, right? And this will
known
not...
Known for its private banking.
For its private banking, and this will not bode well for them. I think there are a lot of pressure, I think, from the European Parliament to review its relationship with the with Switzerland and could be considered as one of the countries associated with high risk of financial crime.
Well, I think more will be revealed because Guardian is actually one of the 48 media partners around the world. So even includes NDR, the Miami Herald, New York Times. So they're going to spend months, if they've really spent months, using the data to investigate the bank. And it's not like Credit Suisse has not been in the limelight for all the wrong reasons. They've just had their CEO resign because he didn't follow protocol over SOPs. And he wasn't keeping up with the rules. And in the past or so, the profit has come under pressure. They have not really been able to make headway in the world of investment banking like they used to in the past. So I wonder what this means also for the very lucrative private banking part.
I have to say, many of the European-based banks that tried to go global, for example, even Deutsche Bank, you know, really struggled, I think, to keep up with the margins and the level of profitability that the US investment banks did. Deutsche Bank has done quite a pretty good job, but you said Credit Suisse has had a very tumultuous few months so far.
Yeah, not so easy. Even HSBC, for example, right? Trying to break into America, that failed. They closed it down. Banking is a cutthroat business. It's all about size, scale. Relationships do count. It's the number of M&A deals. Also, your proprietary book when it comes to trading, where if you take the right decision or you don't, then you really do see that in your accounts.
Yeah.
But we'll be following this story because, you know, let's see who else is on the list. I wonder whether any Malaysians are on that list.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Neither would I. Well, it's 6:45 in the morning, and when we come back, we'll look at what's happening in the local papers. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, just to remind you who you're listening to, I'm Wong Shao Ning together with Philip C, and this is The Morning Run. And that song was Malibu by Hole.
Have you been to Malibu before?
No, I've not. Did I miss out? Is it worth going?
I haven't been as well. So
it's California, right?
It's on my bucket list. It's because I'm just so jealous when I saw Australia reopen.
Well, hurry up, pick up that bucket list, revive it, and off we go, because it looks like a lot of countries are really opening up very quickly, right? And staying on that topic, I'm going to talk about travel. So page 8 of the New Straits Times says that, you know, Langkawi, a lot of people don't realize it, but we've actually had a Langkawi international travel bubble since November, and about 4,600 tourists have used that to actually come into Malaysia. Because if you go through Langkawi, you don't actually have to quarantine.
Yes.
And of that, 125 of them, or 2%, actually had COVID-19. So not so bad, I would
think. Not so bad, actually. But I think Langkawi is just a small sector of the overall economy. And that's why even on the front page of the Malaysian Reserve, tourism operators want exact timeline for border reopening, because we are getting a couple of conflicting signals from the government, right? Hmm. If you remember, former Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin was saying he would like borders to reopen March 1st. I think over the weekend, our health minister, Khairi Jamaluddin, said likely in Q2. I wonder if that will be after Raya, the peak Raya. And that's also within the Q2 period, June. So let's hope that we have very clear timelines on when borders will reopen for us to plan our holidays.
But I wonder whether it's also difficult for them to do so, right? Because the reality is that day to day,
Cases
is one thing, but I think the other priority is, of course, the stress it has on the healthcare system, right? So the other data points that we are monitoring very, very closely include, of course, the hospitalization rates, the usage of ICU, the usage of ventilators. All those are key things that we have to pay attention to. You know we have to live with the virus, and we know that we have to continue to follow the SOPs. But unfortunately, in Malaysia, for example, there are still segments of society that remain unvaccinated who haven't had their boosters. So we have to be careful about this. I guess it's hard to roll out policy with 100% certainty and clarity.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. What is very interesting, I must say, in my observation in the past few months with Omicron, especially in European countries, even in the midst of very high case loads, I think policy is still pushing for a parallel reopening. You know, that was something I found quite interesting. Whereas if you recall what happened in 2021 and 2020, I think when you see these case loads, you know, typically it followed with a policy that was reflective of that, which was tightening. But what we see here is a bit different, actually. People are still actually planning and going ahead to do the reopening.
Well, we've lived with this virus for what, coming into the third year, right? So what you could, I mean, essentially every government should be planning for the worst and hoping for the best. Yeah. That's all we can do. What else has caught your eye?
I mean, I think the whole reason why they have to do this is for the economy. And I think one of the key concerns is wages. And the Malaysian Reserve on the front page also points out that fresh graduates were worst hit as minimum wage debate continues. Now, the Department of Stats reported that graduates under the age of 25 witnessed a 25% drop in their median salary from 2,066 ringgit a month in 2019 to 1,550 a month in 2020.
This is the real definition of underemployment, not unemployment, underemployment.
Yes.
I'm just curious, are employers taking advantage of the current situation? Or really is it because business is so bad that you have to pay people so little?
Yes, and these are fresh graduates. Yeah. We're not even talking about the perception of, as you say, no degrees and such. These are professional graduates, and the pay is appalling in my view.
So is it because employers are taking advantage of it? These people don't have the right skill set, so they're forced to take jobs like this. So many questions, right? And, you know, because wages are so artificially low in Malaysia, people can't afford to save for retirement. They can't get on the property ladder. There's so many consequences of this. We really need to look at this in a more structural manner. Otherwise, the consequences, there'll be long-term ones for us.
And can I just stay on the and labor theme as well? Parallel to this issue about younger graduates paying much less, the Ministry of Human Resource received 111,807 foreign worker applications from February 15th to 20th. So in 6 days, 112,000 foreign worker applications. While we contrast that with this 25% drop in.
Yeah, I don't have a solution for it, but somebody has to look at it from a strategic perspective and come up with a policy that really, really works to address this agenda. Something actually we'll be talking to Chin Chee Siong, National Secretary General of the SME Association of Malaysia. They too have been calling for labor, actually, because they've been affected, whether it's F&B, whether it's manufacturing. This is a common cry that we hear from them. But up next, we've got the 7 a.m. news. But to take us there is Feel Good Inc. by Gorillaz. Did I get it right?
Possibly.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.